It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we visit with activists who have been working in the region for quite some time.
It takes a lot of courage to stand up when you're right in the middle of it, and that's what Coal River Mountain Watch has been doing for its two decades of existence.
We'll hear more about the Coal River Mountain Watch on this West Virginia morning. Democratic Delegate Isaac Spanoggle announced he is running for West Virginia's Attorney General in 2020. He made the announcement Monday at the state capitol. In a news release, Spanoggle took aim at Republican Attorney General Patrick Morrissey for his ties to the pharmaceutical industry. Morrissey was first elected in 2012 and won again in 2016. Spanoggle, an attorney from Pendleton County, was first elected to the House of Delegates in 2012. He currently serves as one of the minority party's deputy whips. He'll face Beckley-based attorney Sam Petsonk in a May primary. Petsonk filed pre-candidacy papers in June. Ohio Valley coal miners are one step closer to federal support for their pensions and health benefits. As Becca Schimmel reports, a bill to secure pension and health benefits for retirees has been attached to a federal spending bill.
Regional lawmakers close to U.S. Senate negotiations say the Bipartisan American Miners Act of 2019 has been attached to a must-pass bill that will fund the federal government. The legislation would secure pensions for about 82,000 coal miners who could lose some or all of their retirement benefits by sometime next year without congressional action. West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin said in remarks on the Senate floor last week that he would block all Senate action until the miners' benefits were secured. Recently, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky signed on as a co-sponsor to the bill with other Ohio Valley lawmakers to shore up those benefits. In a release, a spokesperson for the United Mine Workers said passing the Bipartisan American Miners Act would end a 10-year battle to preserve benefits. The bill is expected to be voted on in both chambers this week. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel.
Mountaintop removal coal mining has profoundly changed Appalachia's landscape and people. The controversial practice blows off the tops of mountains to get to the coal below, and it's sparked a wave of protests from affected communities. One group in the heart of West Virginia's coal country recently marked 20 years of activism against mountaintop removal. Reporter Brittany Patterson visited Coal River Mountain Watch as the organization takes stock of two decades of work.
Coal River Mountain Watch's history of resistance is plastered on the walls of the group's modest office in Raleigh County, West Virginia. Co-executive director Vernon Haltom points to a series of framed photos.
Ah, here we go. Over here by the pop-up machine. So there's Janice back there. And here's Debbie, our co-director, being cuffed.
The nonprofit started in response to mountaintop removal mining, which was reshaping the landscape and life in southern West Virginia.
It takes a lot of courage to stand up when you're right in the middle of it, and that's what Coal River Mountain Watch has been doing for its two decades of existence.
Vivian Stockman with the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition says the group's profile grew in the early 2000s, in part because of activist Judy Bonds.
Judy Bonds was fond of saying, "Turn the dozers around."
A coal miner's daughter and waitress, Bonds won the Goldman Prize, sometimes called the Green Nobel, for her work in Appalachia. In her 2003 acceptance speech, she preached the power of organizing.
Organize, educate, motivate, mentor young children.
The group focused on grassroots action and protest, but Bonds also made some unlikely allies, like Mike Caputo, an organizer with United Mine Workers. The two teamed up to reduce the weight of coal trucks. Caputo, now a delegate in West Virginia's legislature, says Bonds was dedicated to her community.
Even when we disagreed, I miss her dearly. She was a true... You look up the word activist and you'll see Judy Bonds' picture beside it.
Bonds died of cancer in 2011, two decades after Coal River Mountain Watch began its battle to stop mountaintop removal. The practice continues. Funders' priorities have shifted, limiting resources. but Haltom says the group claims some hard-fought victories. It helped move an elementary school that had been literally in the shadow of a massive mining operation. And research has validated many concerns the group raised about the health impacts of mountaintop removal. It's linked to cancer, lung disease, and birth defects.
The blasting dust is deadly. I mean, it's silica. We've known silica as a killer. But for some reason, people think that Appalachians are immune to it.
At their solar-powered headquarters, the group models possible alternatives to coal mining, such as hemp farming and beekeeping. And they're instilling in a younger generation a passion for the mountains around them. To mark its 20 years, Coal River Mountain Watch hosted a creek cleanup. Dozens of kids and adults crashed through Peachtree Creek, gathering bottles, plastic bags, and even a kid-sized swimming pool. After more than an hour of tough work, volunteers took a dip in Peachtree Falls. Despite recent setbacks, Haltom says Coal River Mountain Watch will keep fighting to make the community better.
I think we've come a long way in helping people understand that there's a better way of living. You know, don't treat your community like it's a disposable item.
That's what the cleanup at Peachtree Falls embodies. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson in Raleigh County, West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. The National Weather Service has issued a flood warning for western, central, and north central areas of West Virginia. Chance of rain, freezing rain, or snow today. Temperatures in the 30s and 40s in the north and in the 50s in the south, but temperatures falling into the 30s by this afternoon. Support for WVPB is provided by Pies and Pints in Charleston, Morgantown, and Fayetteville, featuring craft beer, hand-tossed pizza, char-grilled wings, and more for lunch, dinner, special events, and holiday parties. Details at piesandpints.net. And by Dutch Miller Subaru in Charleston, supporting local charities through the Subaru Share the Love event now through January 2nd. More about how sharing the love can make a lasting impact at DutchMillerSubaru.com. Catherine Manley grew up in abject poverty in Logan County, West Virginia, but went on to become a teacher in the same school she attended. Mountain State Press recently published her memoir, Don't Tell Them You're Cold, about her upbringing and how she overcame those challenges. She spoke to producer Eric Douglas about the book.
Give us the overall idea behind the book.
The book ranges in age from my being 6 years old to approximately 19. I do go a little bit later on and tell you a few things happened after that, but it deals with my family struggle with abject poverty there in Logan County, a little bit in Kanawha County, and how I was able to make it out.
Why did you decide to write a memoir? I mean, this has got to be difficult to mm-hmm. even dredge up and write about.
Well, I hadn't even thought about it. I just thought, well, this is what some folks go through, and either some of us make it out and some of us don't. But as I got older, and I would share some of these stories with others, and they would say, you need to write that down. Then Dr. Fran Simone mm-hmm. from the West Virginia Writing Project, I had her in class around 95 or 96, and she read my first three pieces, and she said, oh, you have to write these down.
What's your family's reaction to it?
I have a brother in Pennsylvania, and I sent him a copy, and he was glad that I told the story because it helped him see. He was much younger mm-hmm. than I was, and my husband is really supportive, and my three children, they said that I'm giving them a look into my life that they probably never would have known about, but now it's on the printed page for them to see.
It's interesting, the stories you tell, even from 6, 7, your earliest memories mm-hmm. of where you started the book, I never got the feeling that you weren't angry, you weren't embarrassed. Mm-mm. It was just, And actually, you almost described it as a decent childhood, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. the early years.
Mm-hmm. It was just a way of life, Eric. And also, it was the time in which I was raised in the late 50s and 60s. We were very resourceful. I think we probably used all the resources given to us, in whether it was in a mountain or beside the river or in a dump. You just did that.
What did you learn when you wrote the book?
Oh, my goodness. I cried a lot. I really did. Some of the chapters I cried, and I'd have to push the keyboard back. And some of the chapters I laughed about, especially relatives and survivors. I learned that I was probably stronger than what I thought I was.
Oh, I thought one of the interesting devices you used in the book was the letters. The letters to yourself, letters mm-hmm. to your mother, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Where did that idea come from?
I had some really good people that were helping me, working with me. And someone, they wanted something else. They wanted to know what I thought about this happening, what I thought about that happening. And at that time, I wasn't sure how to work that in the book. So I sat down and I thought, well, I remember those evenings when things were difficult. I would lay in bed at night and I would talk to God. I would just look, part the curtain, look up there, and I would say, God, I know you're up there somewhere. And I would just start talking and talking. So I thought, what about a letter?
What do you hope people come out of after reading this book?
Oh, goodness. I hope that they are strengthened in their hope that they can make it out, that it will inspire them. And if there's anyone going through a challenging situation right now, just realize that nothing is permanent. I mean, whatever you're going through today, you can wake up in the morning and it's a new day, and there's a way that you can make it out. Never give up hope.
I thought it was interesting too, when you were graduating high school, you were accepted into college, and then for financial issues and family issues, you chose not to go. And it was 10 years before you returned to Marshall, where you had been mm-hmm. accepted before. I thought that was impressive that you held on to that dream. You mm-hmm. you worked and started raising your family, but you still went back to school later when you got that opportunity.
Yes, I always wanted to be a teacher. I enjoyed going to Logan High School and being with my classmates, and I was always helping someone work on their next semester, their schedule, or I was showing them how to do this or how to do that. And I enjoyed, sometimes I would go into the morning, and I always loved reading, as someone would say, I didn't understand that story. Can you explain it to me? Can you tell me? And I would do that. And I thought, hey, you know, maybe I do have that little teaching bug in me. I can do that. But yeah, I held on to that dream.
Anything else we haven't talked about that you'd like to add?
By me writing the book, I think that I have also learned that the thought that the poor people will never, ever matter. I think that is so wrong. I've actually heard someone say to me one time, oh, they don't matter. But oh, yes, they do. If we don't do something to correct this, reverse the cycle of poverty, then this is just going to be another chapter written in history. And so that's my platform as I travel around the state and other places to get children to realize they are important, but they must dream. They must set a goal for themselves. And as adults, we must help them.
That was Kathy Manley discussing her memoir, Don't Tell Them You're Cold, with Eric Douglas. The title refers to a time when she was begging on the streets of Logan with her father. He was afraid the authorities would take her away if she told anyone she was cold. This interview is part of a series of occasional interviews with our in-house author, Eric Douglas. He talks to writers from or writing about Appalachia. You can find more of these interviews on our website at wvpublic.org. Search for Appalachian Author Interviews. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.